Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is March 11th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope everyone enjoyed their weekend. So let's get into some of the economic news on this Monday. So quite the turnaround we had in the stock market. The S&P was up 40 points or 1.5%. The Dow was up 200 points. The NASDAQ was up 150 points or 2%. And the Russell 2000, the small cap index, was up 27 points or 1.8%. And don't let the Dow fool you, being up 200%. That was a near, well, it was over a 400-point swing because the market opened to the downside. And this was in large part due to Boeing. I'm sure many of you are aware of the plane crash that occurred in Ethiopia, and all of our thoughts and prayers are with those victims and with the loved ones of those victims. That Boeing, this was the second incident where a plane of this model actually crashed shortly after takeoff. So the stock was actually down 10% at its low point for the day and then rallied back to close down a little over 5%. But that was the main gist of the Dow's downtrend early in the day. And then I guess there was some somewhat favorable news, I guess you could say, for Boeing, at least, that it was able to recoup a lot of those losses. Despite that there has not been, obviously, a thorough investigation. I mean, these things can take months, if not years, to have a thorough aviation investigation, but basically said that the planes were safe to fly, although China grounded their entire fleet that corresponded to that model. So we'll see what happens. But I mean, Boeing has just been on a tear recently. I mean, they're just making money hand over fist. That stock price has just been on an elevator ride straight up to the penthouse. So that was a good pullback. Perhaps it provides a good buying opportunity if people have the stomach for the potential volatility in it, if there's some further negative news. But I mean, the stock was trading at $440 a share not too long ago. I'm talking only about a week and a half ago, and now it sits at $400. So, I mean, to get back up to that point, it's 10% gain right there. So not too shabby if it can find strength and get back to its recent high there at $440. And now oil sits above $57 as I sit here speaking with you guys. So this is an increase in the price. What's going to happen? Is President Trump going to like this price? I mean, where's the limit? Because recall at his CPAC speech, he wanted a weaker dollar. Well, you get a weaker dollar, you get more expensive oil. But it wasn't very long ago where he was out tweeting that oil prices were getting too high. Knock it off, OPEC. So what do you want, Mr. President? Do you think you can get both? Like I said, you ask, maybe you shall receive. But it's unlikely that you get a weaker dollar and weaker oil prices at the same time. Something typically gives. Then you have the gold and silver markets. They were a little moved, but both down to the downside earlier in the day. And then I think as I sit here today, right now, they're moving up slightly, but nothing to write home about. The 10-year bond, the yield has increased. It now sits at 2.64. The VIX dropped by 10%. The volatility index got hit by 10% and now sits at 14.33. And as I sit here right now looking at the Asian markets, we have the Nikkei, the Japan index, and the Hang Seng, the Hong Kong index, both up 400 points. Now, of course, that could change course, but as I sit here right now, they're both up 400 points, which is a big move. And of course, they are riding the tidal wave from the American markets earlier today. Now to some currencies. If you just listen to the political and geopolitical podcast, I discuss some breaking news in regards to the Brexit. And even though we are in the 11th hour, 59th minute, it does appear that the Prime Minister, Theresa May, was able to work a little bit of last-minute magic with her counterparts in the EU to finally get a deal struck that she believes can be agreed upon by the members of the British Parliament. Now, that vote takes place tomorrow, so she did not give the members of Parliament a lot of time to read over the deal, but that's the world we live in. So we'll see if they come to a vote on that to actually leave Brexit with a deal. With a deal. They could potentially leave Brexit without a deal. And then it's possible that this thing gets kicked down further and further down the road if they vote this deal down, and then they vote that they don't want a no Brexit, a no deal Brexit. Oh man, it's just a saga that doesn't continue. It's a shame for the institution of democracy, for the people to vote 3 years ago, going on 3 years ago, back in 2016. We're in the 11th hour, 59th minute, and this thing still might get shot down. Remember, the deal got shut down back in January, but the prime minister did survive the subsequent vote of no confidence, so she is obviously still the prime minister. But now she has this. What's going to happen tomorrow? It's going to be very, very interesting. But the markets at this point seem to like it. It's a rallying cry for the upside of these markets. And the British pound is rallying on the news. It now sits at $1.32 to the U.S. dollar. So it has appreciated. I mean, and that has been the trend ever since the prime minister has really said, you know, we're going to either get another deal or there may be a possible extension of Article 50, which just means that the deadline of March 29th could be extended. To what time? Nobody knows. So it would be an indefinite extension. But the market seemed to like that because it was a reprieve from all of this drama that was taking place. And so the pound has been moving up and down, but more or less to the upside recently. And obviously on the back of this news, the pound was rallying. Of course, if things turn the other way, you're going to have some big downside movement, I would expect, in the pound and as well as other currencies and the broader markets to take place. So we'll see what happens. But so far, the markets like it. The ultimate question is, will the British people or the people of the UK like it? And will the members of Parliament vote for it? Because Jean-Claude Juncker, president of the EU, says there's no third chance. There is no third chance here. You got a second chance, you better use it wisely. And of course, he is arrogantly saying, well, you either have this deal and you have Brexit, or you might have no Brexit at all. Well, excuse me, sir, it's not for you to decide that. The people of the UK already have. So it's just a matter of whether there's a deal or no deal is really what it comes down to. But that's the arrogance of the EU and a whole bunch of other politicians the world over that we're all subject to, unfortunately. But hopefully, the British government provides their people with a Brexit that they voted for. I don't care if it was contentious or not. I don't care if it was 3 years ago or not. That's how it works. You didn't want to do it, then you shouldn't have put it to a referendum. You did, now you got to deliver. So that'll be some interesting news as we make our way through this week, and really tomorrow is going to be very telling. Now, some other news that I want to touch base on from last week is in regards to the U.S.-China trade talks and some comments by Larry Kudlow, because I didn't touch up on everything that I wanted to get to last week, so I just want to follow up real quickly with that. But before I get to that, there was some economic news out today. We had retail sales figures come out today. They were published by the Commerce Department. And for the month of January, the sales rose unexpectedly to 0.2%, a whopping 0.2%. So, I mean, anything that can light a fire under these markets, I guess, is good enough. So 0.2% was better than expected, and so the markets rallied. This much, I mean, that's a little, I mean, I guess they're looking for some type of excuse, some type of cover for the funny money that continues to be printed in funnels into these markets to keep it propped up. So I guess any good news is disproportionately better news. Now, there was a downside to the report too, but clearly that was just entirely disregarded. The December figure was initially 1.2%, and that was one of the worst readings, a month-over-month reading, and I think, 8 or 9 years? So that was not a good report, and the market sold off accordingly when that came out. But now that was revised down even further to 1.6%. 1.2 initial, now it's revised down even further to 1.6%. We have a 0.2% increase in January in the market's rally, 1.5% to 2%. I can't make this stuff up. The next report for the retail sales will come out on April 1st, and that will be for the month of February. Of course, we are pushed back even further because of the partial government shutdown. So once again, the partial government shutdown is an excuse to delay more and more information. But once that comes out, April 1st, we'll give that report to you guys as well. What's it going to be? I don't know. I mean, even if it beats, today we got 0.2%. That was better than expected, and the markets are up over 2%. I mean, you know, that's ridiculous, but it is what it is. Now, back to Larry Kudlow and the U.S.-China trade talks and some of the comments that he made on Friday. Of course, if you remember, we had the jobs report out on Friday, and we had a whopping 20,000 jobs added, right? We were expecting 180,000 jobs. We got 20,000, and of course, because it was a bad report, Larry Kudlow and the White House really had nothing to say about it except, you know, say, it's just a blip on the radar. You don't have to pay attention to it. Of course, if it had been the other way, if it was 200,000 jobs added and we beat expectations of 180, I mean, they would have been talking about it night and day. I mean, even the president on some of his tweets, he sent out a video on a tweet, very cleverly, of course, not talking about the 20,000 jobs that were added when 180,000 were expected. But he played it like every politician does, to their favor, and talked about the wage growth of 3.4%, talked about some 5 million jobs being created since his election, and, you know, a host of other things to cast a shadow over the fact that only 20,000 jobs were added in February. So that was not good. It was not good. But we know the hyperbole, we know the propaganda that comes out of every White House. It doesn't matter who the president is. Don't get caught up in a cult of personality. If you like somebody, fine, you vote for them if you agree with them. But you don't follow them blindly. You just don't follow them blindly to the wood chipper. You just don't. And I am for President Trump on a lot of things. You know this. And I am against the president and his policies on a host of other things. And a lot of it has to do with the economy. There are some things he can be applauded for. There's others not so much. Not so much. And, of course, with the other story on the podcast previously, on the political geopolitical report today, we talked about the $4.75 trillion budget that the White House submitted to Congress today. That's outrageous, $4.75 trillion. There's no balanced budget in sight. There's trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. And if this economy does do a downturn, and a big one, and we have a recession, those deficits are going to be even bigger. So that's a critique right there. There's no structural reform. We need structural reform. Not little Band-Aids, not a little stitch here. We need structural reforms. But back to Mr. Kudlow and some of his comments on Friday in regards to the U.S.-China trade talks. Of course, we went from a historic, remarkable, fantastic deal to President Trump and President Xi meeting at Mar-a-Lago at the end of this month to now, wait for this, we have a cautiously optimistic tone. Those are the words. From fantastic, remarkable, historic, they're going to meet, we're just trying to iron out the details, to cautiously optimistic that we will get a deal, and the president will only sign a deal if it's in the best interest of the American people. He's not just going to sign a quick deal. Well, we know that. I mean, these tariffs have been on for almost a year now. We had the 90-day wait-and-see policy. Now we have the increase in potential further tariffs delayed for an indefinite amount of period because everything was going so grandly. But now it's cautiously optimistic. And while we were expecting these leaders to have some sort of signing ceremony potentially at the end of this month, well, it's not written in cement. That's according to Mr. Kudlow. Maybe it's going to be the end of this month. Maybe it's going to be in April. I don't know. So what's going on here? Are the Chinese, are they going to pull a President Trump and walk away? Are they going to pull that move? Are they going to walk away, say it's not good for the Chinese people, we don't like it? Because is that what President Trump and the White House are trying to position themselves for too? Well, if it's not a great deal, the president's not going to sign it, which I get and understand. I get that and understand, and that's how it should be. I mean, period. That's common sense. You only sign a deal and do a deal if it's in your best interest. Now, of course, any good deal, there's going to be some give and take. That's understandable. That's common sense. But don't come out for the past going on 3 months now saying it's the best thing ever, getting markets to rally on this news, and then come out and say, well, now we're cautiously optimistic. There's been a lot of headway, but the president is only going to sign it if it's a good thing. He's not going to do just a quick deal just to do a deal. Come on. This is my problem with this stuff. Don't do it. Just speak the truth. I don't know what's so difficult about just telling the truth. I just don't get it. I mean, again, if this is a quote-unquote trade war, like any war, I've said this many times here on this program, the truth is the first casualty of war, so we can't be surprised by that. These are politicians. It's what they do. We can't be surprised by that. But if you want to solve the problem, if you want to move forward in a positive direction, maybe we have to stop doing what we've been doing for so long that led to the problems we're in. Maybe we need fresh thinking. You know what I mean? Maybe we need people who are actually going to tell us the truth. I mean, if we're supposed to be a government governed by the people, in order to make wise and prudent decisions, we need the truth. Otherwise, we're going to make terrible decisions. That's common sense. We can't make the right or the best decision if we're given faulty and false information all the time. Which is what it is. We're just treated as kids. We're treated as idiots. We're treated as peons. Unless it's an election cycle. And then you're promised things that are unaffordable and unsustainable. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. So that's where we stand with the trade talks. I mean, they're pretty much on pause. What's going to happen is anybody's guess at this point. Because it's been a 180. It's been fantastic. Now it's cautiously optimistic. There's not a whole bunch of tweeting from the president, so that's sort of telling as well. Because you would think if they were nearing an actual meeting with President Xi in Mar-a-Lago, that he would be saying something about it to tout himself as a great deal maker and that something historic is taking place. Look, I hope something historic does take place. I hope we can come to an agreement. I'm rooting for the president. I just don't like the style and the manner in which he himself and how he sends his minions out there to tell us a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't turn out to be true just because a simple story comes out from the other side, meaning the Chinese, that says, well, you know, we agree that we're making concessions and things are getting done, but, you know, cool your heels here. I don't know about historic. I don't know about remarkable. I don't know about fantastic. And that's all it takes. That's all it takes. Because if the art of the deal, if he has his moves used against him and the Chinese walk away, where's that going to leave us? Are those tariffs, those additional tariffs, going to be put on? I don't know. Because you would have to think, if this is buy the rumor, sell the news, and we've had all of this run-up over the past few months in regards to, obviously, the money printing from the Federal Reserve and other central banks doing policy 180s, but also a deal is coming between U.S. and China, you think, if that's not true, that these markets would collapse. Because that's really what's been propping this stuff up on both sides. Not only the U.S. markets, but the Chinese markets and some of the Asian markets. I mean, I just said previously, you got 400 points on the Nikkei and the Hang Seng just because the retail sales in the U.S. beat. We had 0.2% retail sales, the markets rally, and now you got the Asian markets rallying behind us. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. I cannot make it up. I'm speechless. I am speechless, but not for long. I got something else to say. I don't know if you guys saw it yesterday on Sunday on 60 Minutes, but the Three Stooges made an appearance. The Three Stooges. Don't you love those people? I don't mean Mo, Larry, and Curly, unfortunately. Those guys are phenomenal. I'm talking about the Fed chairman and the two former Fed chairmen. So we had Jay Powell, Aunt Janet Yellen, and Uncle Ben Bernanke on 60 Minutes. What are they doing on 60 Minutes? How often do you see the Federal Reserve Chairman give interviews, especially of that nature, on 60 Minutes? And, of course, the interviewer was none other than Scott Pelley, the same guy who interviewed Andrew McCabe of the FBI, the same FBI and DOJ who was staging a coup against the President of the United States to overthrow this country's government. And what great questions does this investigative journalist have? Do you like Jim Comey? Were you guys friends? Did you eat peanut butter and jelly together in the lunchroom? Did you hold hands and skip down the hall? Give me a break, Scott Pelley. And then, of course, he tilts his head, looks pensive, and puts his glasses in his mouth just to look very intelligent when he's asking questions. He did that with McCabe. He did it with the Three Stooges. He could ask some serious questions. You have, and of course, the Three Stooges were actually only sitting together for a couple questions, and those were as softball as it gets. Well, what did you tell Jay Powell before he took over the position? What advice did you give him? Well, keep the pedal to the metal, Jay. Keep printing money, because this economy is fake. And as soon as you stop printing money, and as soon as you start increasing interest rates, this thing is going to collapse. Of course, they didn't say that, but that's what they said between the lines, because that's the truth. That's what they have to do. That's why we had a 20% correction, if you will, in the fourth quarter of 2018, because the man came out and said, well, we're on autopilot. Quantitative tightening is here to stay, and we can continue to increase interest rates. And then Aunt Janet Yellen and Uncle Ben Bernanke pulled him aside along with other people, and they said, we know you're new. We know you're not an egghead PhD economist, but it's okay. We got your back. We'll come out and we'll say he didn't mean it. We're going to keep the pedal to the metal. And then the markets rallied. They loved it. The crack addicts getting their crack. They love it. How could they not? And the markets have been up on a tear ever since. Of course, last week was a minor exception, but that was just a little pullback. We got 2% back today because there was a great retail sales report. 0.2%. That's fantastic. I hope you can tell the sarcasm in my voice. So here they are on 60 Minutes. Prime opportunity for 60 Minutes to actually do some real reporting and really do some justice for the American people, to give the American people an inside look into the Federal Reserve, which most people don't even know it exists. They have no idea what it does. They have no idea who these people are, were, what they've done. So, I mean, he really could have honed in and made some noise. Now, of course, the 60 Minutes program, which I typically like and enjoy, it has, what, three or four segments each, 15 minutes each, something like that. So there's only so much you can do, and then they fill it with them walking down the street and reading a report or something like that, obviously for production purposes. Where was the hardball questions? You know, what keeps you up at night was a question. What keeps you up at night? And then he gets off on cybersecurity. He gets off on cybersecurity, which is fine. That's legitimate. But we have some serious problems facing us right now. Because what's he going to tell us about cybersecurity? I mean, nothing. He's not an IT specialist. He's not a Defense Department contractor. He's not working for the CIA or the NSA telling people what to do, this, that, and the other. Nor would he divulge those secrets. But he could say what's actually taking place in the economy and what are some real policy prescriptions that the Federal Reserve is actually contemplating. He could have asked them the simple question like I did when you go onto the Capital News and you look under the K word and you look up my report on this, the article that I wrote, what Americans do you work for, Mr. Powell? I mean, he could have asked him that question because it was sitting there nice, high and tight fastball. He could have knocked it out of the park, but Scott Pelley doesn't know what he's doing. Doesn't know what he's doing. Because again, Jay Powell said, you know, we work for the American people. We're here for their better interests. Of course, he wasn't pressed on what American people he actually works for, because we know it's not the low and middle income class people in this country. We know it's not people on a fixed income. We know it's not people who are trying to save because they have no earnings, no interest on their savings. But you have income inequality as large as it's ever been. And this, again, is admitted to by billionaires who make their living trading and investing in the markets. Well, this has been the largest. This has been the largest wealth transfer in human history. This policy of quantitative easing, zero interest rate policy, has transferred money from the low-income and middle-income families to me. That was Stanley Druckenmiller, a multi-billion dollar hedge fund manager. I don't demonize his success. I applaud his audacity to come out and tell people the truth. And this was, I think, 4 years ago. I think that was on an interview he gave in 2015. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Ask some serious questions. Ask them who they're accountable to, which he kind of did. I'll give him credit for that. He kind of did, but he didn't press him on it because, of course, the Federal Reserve answers to nobody. Sure, they get paraded up there on Capitol Hill, which we had those discussions because that was only a couple weeks ago. Nothing happens. Nobody overrules him. He says things are unsustainable. Well, what's your policy prescription? Well, it's not my realm. I don't get involved in that. That's your job. You could increase interest rates. You could say enough's enough. You could say, okay, Uncle Sam, you want to continue down this unsustainable path? Okay, go ahead, but it's going to cost you 6% to borrow money to do it. That's going to wake up a lot of politicians overnight and say, well, we can't do it. They're going to have to go back to their constituents and be honest. I know it's incredibly difficult for politicians to actually be honest and go back and tell their constituents that you have been sold a bill of goods. We can't maintain this. The demographics are gone. We have not been good stewards of your money. And, you know, we're going to have to pay the piper. Pay the piper. I'm sorry. We could either do this as responsible adults and citizens, or we can sit back and let the market fix it for us. And believe you me, the market will show nobody mercy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, see if you can check out that interview. The Three Stooges made a comeback on 60 Minutes, and boy, were they funny. It's been a pleasure having you. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out. I am going to keep you guys updated on all this nonsense because it's just so much fun. I'll catch you guys next time. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.